This talk is my own work, but I thought there was enough interest in the subject that at least one person should talk about cosmic strings and kind of what's happening and what's not happening. So this is kind of a review talk. I should apologize that I won't talk about everything that people are doing, but I'm going to focus on things connected to observation for the most part. So first I'll review what Rob Myers told you at Paris a year ago. Then, have we seen a string yet? And then a couple of more detailed issues having to do with string networks and their connection with the microscopic physics of the string. So, in order for cosmic strings or superstrings to be interesting, they have to be satisfy a number of conditions. They have to be produced at an appropriate time in the early universe. They have to be stable on cosmological timescales. They have to be observable in some way. And these are all necessary conditions. And finally, it would be nice if there were some way to distinguish strings with different microscopic structures. Now, as far as production, in hybrid inflation, a version which is favored for cosmological reasons, inflation ends in a symmetry breaking phase transition, and if the U1 symmetry that breaks, then a network of cosmic strings forms because the Higgs field rolls down in different ways in different places, and at the end you're left with some kind of tangled mess of strings like that. I don't know if you can see the two of those things are in red. I said, okay, now inflation ends. So strings that are produced earlier, before the end of inflation, are probably uninteresting because they're diluted away by inflation. Strings that are produced later are still interesting, but they would be associated with a lower energy scale and be harder to see. So the strings which are most interesting are those which are produced right at the end of inflation, and hybrid inflation is perfect for that. Percolating means that a finite fraction of the total string length is in the form of infinite random walks. And again, that generically happens because in three dimensions, a random walk doesn't usually come back to its starting point, doesn't really meet itself, and so once it wanders a certain way from its starting point, it usually goes on forever. So this happens generically when a U1 symmetry breaks. A few years ago, Henry Tai and collaborators, many of whom are here, noticed that observed that exactly this happened, that the D bar inflation is a beautiful realization of this, because when the D bar annihilate, you've got a tachyon which rolls down and breaks a U1. It's literally a realization of hybrid inflation, and so one gets K theory written across the sky as the formation of D strings, and in fact you also form fundamental strings because you lose two U1s, one on the D brain and one on the D bar. Now, an important question is, how generic is this? Is this special to D bar inflation? Well, maybe that's the way nature works, but it's nice to really have a sense of how generic cosmic D strings, F strings, whatever are. And it's hard to know, but you know, in the heterotic string, for example, if we live in a vacuum, which is well described by the weakly or strongly coupled heterotic string, it's much harder to see how fundamental objects would be produced as cosmic strings. For example, an M5 bar annihilation, which you have in strongly coupled heterotic string theory, maybe, then strings generically aren't produced. The most obvious cosmic strings in the heterotic string would just be electromagnetic flux tubes in the effective gut. Just a side note, a purely field theoretic grand unified observation, is that these folks have argued that if with two assumptions, so take a grand unified theory with the assumption that part of the symmetry breaking occurs before inflation because you have to dilute the monopoles, and part of the symmetry breaking occurs after inflation because you need hybrid inflation. They argue, scanning over a vast set of possible gauge groups, that with those assumptions, cosmic strings are generic. So that's kind of encouraging. Of course, on this slide, we're mostly talking about gauge theory strings, not fundamental strings. It would be disappointing if we discovered cosmic strings and at the end of the day decided they were just gauge theory strings. But it would still be exciting because cosmic strings, if discovered, would be the highest scale objects in nature. And that's certainly something to hope for. So as far as stability, one way to think about it, both in field theory and in string theory, is that there are three kinds of string, three kinds of long string. There are local strings that have no long-range fields at all. There are global strings that have long-range axion fields, scalar fields winding around them, and there are discrete strings which have an Aharonov Bohm effect when you pass on both sides of them. And the general principle that anything that can happen will happen tells you that a local string can break, and it can. A global string, the anything that can happen here is the axion field can get a potential from instantons which confines the string. Either of those are bad from the point of view of living for a cosmic period of time. Discrete strings are stable, so that's good. The fact that a string is unstable is not the end of the world, because the lifetime could be long. For local strings which break, in many cases there's some kind of energy cost for having the string endpoints. And the Schwinger calculation of decay in one dimension tells you the rate goes as that. So all you need is a factor of 10 in the ratio of mass scales and the breakage is slow enough that it's slow on cosmological timescales. For global strings, they're stable only if the scale of the inflaton, that's supposed to be axion. The scale of the axion potential is suppressed by a large factor. Ed Witten is going to be talking about axions in string theory, so it will be interesting to see how, if any of that leads to interesting global strings in string theory. In the simplest Kashu et al. Model of string inflation, the strings are local. They start as F strings and D strings, which are coupled to axion fields, but the axion fields are projected out in the construction. In more general versions of this, where either you have sort of a more complicated singularity down the throat, or you have large dimensions, you can get both local and global strings. I don't know specifically of ways that discrete strings are produced in DD bar inflation, but at least for the local strings, in many models, this is now a very model-dependent statement, the decay rate can be long due to warp factor and volume effects that suppress the tunneling. And so there's a possibility, but it's model dependent, that these F and D strings produced at the end of inflation survive long enough to be seen. One recent comment on the KKL-MMT model, if you take the original model from the observed microwave fluctuations and the given form of the potential in that model, they deduce the scale of inflation, and from that they deduce the string tension. This is a dimensionless number that always comes up in the discussion of cosmic strings, namely Newton's constant times the string tension. In that model, it's about 2 times 10 to the minus 10th, which, as I'll tell you soon, is about 3 or 4 orders of magnitude below the current bound. It's within range of certain kinds of observation, but it's still several orders of magnitude beyond current observations. Furujai and Tai made the interesting observation that in KKL-MMT, you have to take a phi squared term, a quadratic term of the potential, is tuned to zero exactly. However, if you only require that there be enough e-foldings of inflation, it doesn't have to be zero. There's a range within which it can be. And it's interesting that if you simply require it to be small enough to give enough e-foldings of inflation, they find the tension of these strings can be significantly larger. And this range of numbers, again, is exactly what is interesting, as we'll be seeing, from the point of view of observation. So even within the KKL-MMT model, one could have a string whose tension is very close to the current kinds of observations and bounds. You know, this is just one model, but in a sense, it's very generic. If in fact, you know, the scale of inflation is some ways below the Planck scale, If that hierarchy comes from a gravitational redshift, if it comes from the Randall Thunder mechanism, then D3 brains down a throat is pretty much the most generic way to do it. So this particular model deserves some attention to its specific details. Okay, seeing strings. So I showed you the simulation of the network of strings that forms at the symmetry breaking transition. They form, the universe expands. So I emphasize the infinite random walks because the short little loops that are initially there quickly decay away. The universe expands, the stretch, the long strings collide and reconnect, which builds up a kind of a complicated kinky structure on the strings. Loops break off, and the loops decay by gravitational radiation. And this is a simulation that shows what the resulting network of cosmic strings looks like. The length of one side of this cube is about one-third of the horizon distance, which today would mean 3 billion light years for one side. But the interesting thing is that these networks tend to scale, which means if you look at them at any given time, on the scale of the horizon size at that time, they look the same. And that's important. And all of the discussion of signatures of these things is based on that property and that assumption. A nice number to bear in mind is that this comes from simulations primarily, is that the total length of string in a Hubble volume is about 100 Hubble lengths. That shouldn't be a slash there. It's about 100 Hubble lengths. So there's roughly 100 strings crossing the universe, or maybe 30 crossing the universe, and the rest of the length is in the form of small loops that you see have broken off of the main string. Okay, and I should emphasize that for now, that simulation and the bounds that I'll quote assume the simplest network, which means one kind of string, which has only gravitational interactions, and the strings always reconnect when they collide. They always exchange ends like this. And obviously, I will a little bit talk about more general possibilities later on. Actually, even with these assumptions, there are still major uncertainties about what these string networks do. What they do on the gross scale, the horizon scale, seems pretty robust, but the fine structure, the spectrum of loop sizes, and also the short distance structure on the strings is not well understood quantitatively, and the bounds, especially the bounds, some of them are quite sensitive to these things, and so they have big error bars. But I think the tightest, strongest bound right now is on the effect of these strings on the power spectrum, which again is this number 3 × 10⁻⁷, which again was right around where the upper bound was from those KKL-MMT models. Looking for patterns in the CMB, different groups seem to give widely different numbers with different models. It's hard to understand exactly what their statistical assumptions are, but it's comparable to or maybe weaker than the bounds from the CMB power spectrum. Pulsar timing. So eventually, I should say, by the way, the string here could not be the dark matter. So if you multiply this by the string tension, you find that the string is some fraction of the total energy density of the universe, but not a large fraction. It's 10⁻⁴, 10⁻⁵. So these are not the dark matter, but there's a lot of matter there, and eventually it all ends up as gravitational waves. And so you've got signals from pulsars passing through the gravitational waves, and that puts, again, pretty strong bounds on the string tension. Perhaps weaker than the bounds from the microwave background, but here, this is very, very sensitive to the uncertainties in the network. It could, in fact, be that the bounds are quite a bit stronger than what's quoted here, but the level of theoretical understanding isn't so good. In the future, the CMB and lensing, which I'll talk about, will bring down these current bounds, say, in order of magnitude. Pulsars and LISA and LIGO have the potential to reach down 4 to 6 more orders of magnitude, which means they would be sensitive even to the smaller kind of number that I mentioned earlier on. Okay, so lensing. So I'm going to show you some data that you probably have not seen. I think very few people here have seen this. It's a field of galaxies, and there are four of them which appear to be lensed again by a linear mass distribution. The separation is about 2 seconds of arc, which would correspond to the around the current bound on the tension. The positions and orientations are kind of random, but if you stare at this a while, you can kind of picture kind of a figure eight that does this. And it's not so unreasonable. Figure eight, anyway, it is a little bit suspicious that it goes exactly in front of, exactly down the middle of all four of the galaxies in the field, since most of these other things are stars. It's also surprising that this isn't more well known. Maybe if Lubos Mottled had a blog in 1987, we would know about this. The reason we don't hear about it anymore is because about 3 years later, it was looked at in the radio. And if you look at this pair here, A1, A2, here's the radio. What you see is that A2 is a radio galaxy with two radio lobes, and A1 is not. And this seems to have just done away with the entire thing. If there were a cosmic string splicing down here, what you'd see would be this. See, there'd be a break, and then a bit of the lobe would be duplicated, and that's obviously not there. This is just a warning. This is just a warning that that there's lots of stuff out there, and one shouldn't be too quick to call it a cosmic string. The authors, by the way, in 87, sort of tried to compare the a priori likelihood that this happened due to a cosmic string and the a priori likelihood that it was just a random collection of binary galaxies, and they concluded that before the radio observations that the string was more likely, but this kind of estimate is very hard to make, and they knew that there were large uncertainties. So here's the thing we're talking about now. It's one lens. It's a much more symmetric, much higher quality image, and also the spectra are known, and they match to very high accuracy. On the other object, there was some spectral information, but it was vastly, vastly, vastly more limited, and so there's more information here. The tension works out to, again, 4 times 10 to the minus 7 near the current bounds, although there are various geometric and velocity factors that could make it larger or smaller. Is this really a single galaxy being lensed by a cosmic string, or is it just some accidental binary? Well, no one knows. The authors, the discoverers, say the spectra are identical with a confidence level of 99.9%. It's not clear what that means, because if you talk to astronomers, they'll tell you that most elliptical galaxies have pretty similar spectra, and that has not been factored into this number. So this doesn't have kind of a Bayesian significance that it's 1,000 times more likely than you thought it was. It's hard to say what its significance is at all. It could have been that it would have ruled it out, and it didn't, so it's something. Also, they subtract the two images, and they find that the difference is zero, consistent with the background. That sounds pretty good. Although, again, ellipticals are pretty much round and fuzzy, and they all look more or less the same. And so what you can say here is that both the optical and the spectra are vastly better in quality than on those earlier on the earlier field that I showed you. But on the other hand, the object being looked at is pretty simple in both respects, and it's not clear how much information that represents. The same authors also report that there are 11 candidate lenses in the field of the original galaxy, which is consistent with some kind of extended string wandering around the lensing, and much more than we expected randomly. They haven't published the location or anything about these. This picture, I believe, was copied down by Tom Kibble at a talk they gave, and I guess he only had time to write down 6 of the 11, and he didn't indicate which way they're oriented, but it's kind of suspicious, because if this is a single long string, it has to kind of make a pretty strange excursion. Maybe to do a loop would have a better chance. Anyway, hopefully eventually they will release more information and make the case stronger or not. Also, a moving string, if the string is moving, there'll be a differential effect in the CMB at this point, and these folks have looked for it. In fact, it should be, given the string tension, it should be too small to see. This should not be much of a test of this object. of this event. But they actually do see a two sigma feature, which they attribute to the string moving at 95% of the speed of light. But that's not right, because the same enhancement by the relativistic contraction also appears in the lensing formula. So their interpretation isn't right. There is a part of parameter space where this two sigma effect should be real. It requires, if you go back to those geometric factors, that the string be much closer to the source galaxy than to us. But anyway, so you can take that as you will. So there's the evidence. So it's four pieces of kind of weak evidence, which one would like to believe add up to one piece of strong evidence. But of course, given the earlier example of something which looked pretty good and then went away very quickly, one has to, hope for the best. And Hubble will be looking at this next February, so by strings next year, we'll know probably what is going on there. Now, there's another bit of evidence which is much weaker, and it's the quasar galaxy. This is a well-known system. The two paths have different lengths, and so when the quasar fluctuates, the fluctuations are 417 days out of phase for the two images. And the observers saw some kind of periodic oscillation that was simultaneous for both images, which failing to think of anything else, they proposed was an oscillating cosmic string right around here. But if you take the parameters for that string, the a priori likelihood that a string would be in the right place with the right properties is less than 10 to the minus 8. So this is just not, I think, a serious possibility. So maybe these things will go away, but having these events in front of you raises some interesting theoretical issues. One of them is, is the image too good? Can we already say this can't be a string because the string would look like this? And if the string looks like this, then you're going to see big image, it's going to be much more, it's going to be distorted, nothing like that pretty image. If you look at the simulations, they look more like this. The scale here is about 10 to the fourth times the scale here, if the structure is fractal, so that it's the same at this scale and this scale, then that's the picture, and this is not a string lens galaxy. But nobody knows. The truth is probably somewhere between this picture and this picture. I had hoped to be able to tell you by the time I gave this talk, but they put me on Monday. Actually, this has been understanding the short distance structure has been a hard problem for 15 years. So I don't think Friday would have been any better. But I do think that now that one has this sharp question to focus on, especially since Hubble's going to be looking at this thing with more resolution, it's important to know. And so there's not time for me to give you too much of the detail where this comes from, but the essence of it is that when strings cross, they make kinks. The kinks separate into right movers and left movers, but as long as just the NAMBU action is operating, they'll just continue to move left and right forever without dissipating. The string is so thin that the NAMBU action is pretty much exact. Eventually, gravitational radiation will make them decay, but until that happens, you can work it out. I don't have time again, but essentially, a huge amount of kink structure builds up on short distances, and it's important to understand the correlations between them. One thing I can tell you, again, without going into too much detail, is that the amount of short-distance structure that builds up is strongly correlated to the actual intercommutation probability. If the strings, when they cross each other, reconnect, then very quickly loops will break off of the string and it will get much straighter. If P is very small, if these strings usually pass through each other, then the short-distance structure builds up more. So this is one of the ways in which the microscopic physics of the string, its intercommutation probability, is reflected in, the networks that we see. So when the strings are just sitting out there flopping, it's just a NAMBU action. When their microphysics enters is when they collide, and they can either pass through each other or reconnect. In basically typical models of gauge theory solitons, The effective reconnection probability is around 98%. It's really basically exactly one. For fundamental strings, this is a quantum process, and so it's small. If G string is small, well, there's two pi's that make it bigger, but then if the string can flop around in the compact dimensions, it buys you a logarithm, which tends to offset the factor of 2 pi. So there's a reasonable chance that if these are your only two models, a fundamental string and a typical gauge theory soliton, then you can differentiate them by looking at the string network structure. Of course, there are many more things you can do. These folks have tried to make variant models of field theory. Actually, they find it kind of hard to make variants that are confusable with fundamental strings. For example, one model has n kinds of string where the self-intersection probability is 1 and the unlike reconnection probability is 0, which is sort of like having probability 1 over n on the average. But in fact, you can distinguish this from having one kind of string with self-intersection probability 1 over n. If you look at both sort of the long-distance features and the short-distance features, it's different in the two cases. So that's, by understanding these string networks, if they're out there, there's a fair amount of ability to resolve different microscopic different microscopic models of the string. Of course, well, you can even distinguish something like this with many kinds of strings separated by beads. Electric flux tubes, rather than magnetic, have a reconnection probability 1 over n sub c squared, which makes them much easier to confuse with fundamental strings. But one shouldn't assume from the start that one will fail. I mean, there's actually a remarkable ability here to discern microphysics from observation. Another exotic possibility. Anyway, since I'm over time, have we already seen cosmic strings? I think my pessimism came through. Will we see them in the future? I'm guardedly optimistic. If we see them, can we learn some interesting things? Yes. And will there be a talk on cosmic strings of string 2006? I hope so. So thank you.
Questions?
Yes. Yeah, I hear you. Yes, yes. You mean monopoles and domain walls? Well, I mean, the generic statement is that monopoles and domain walls are problems because they come to dominate the energy density of the universe, whereas strings do not. But again, you can always make perhaps more elaborate models in which they would decay at the right time. But strings seem to be the one real opportunity rather than problem from the point of view of cosmological objects.
It started with something like membrane.
No. It's a string only. I mean, we only see one of its extensions. It could be certainly a higher dimensional thing partly wrapped. I didn't have time. Yeah, right. That certainly is a possibility. It's just a string from the point of view of projection on the dimensions that we see.
Any other questions? Okay, if there are no other questions, let's thank Joe again.
I could have talked for longer.